This is CliffCentral.com.
They had the air conditioning settings on high and cool from Friday's squirting show.
So.
That's why
it's
so cold
for
in
the
here.
Reminder.
Yeah, it's the what's it been?
Pretty much exactly where my buddy is sitting right now.
Yeah.
There was a lot happened.
Except my buddy's chair was not involved. That was removed.
Look, Gareth, it was in the first half. I mean, let's be honest.
Yeah, I saw the video. My chair wasn't involved in the actual squirting process.
Oh, wow! What an exciting weekend! Started like that. How the hell can it go wrong? Good morning, everybody. It's Monday. It's the last day of July.
Yay!
I know. It's ever closer to a little bit of warm weather.
Yep. Today was that day that the birds start to tweet again.
Well, it's also, don't be fooled, it's still chilly outside.
Yeah, sure, but I mean, like, you really can just, this is the home stretch now.
Yeah, I arrived the other day a little bit late, I think it was Friday, and the sun is starting to come up earlier.
Well, that's because you arrived at like 7.
No, because at that time, usually we have the window open and you can see and it's still dark, so I can tell. Anyway, I saw far too much of Ben this weekend.
Oh.
Yeah, you did actually.
Yeah.
Wow, how did that happen?
I don't know.
Saturday and Sunday.
We went to a birthday party on Saturday, and then I saw Ben yesterday. I had a nice cup of tea.
You did? Mm. I had beer. I had so much to drink this weekend.
Look at you guys, hashtag besties.
I had at least 10 drinks over 2 days this weekend.
Sure.
At least 10?
Yeah.
Sure, Ben, you're really going large. Oh, Amanda's even horrified. She's like, wow, Ben had 10 whole drinks? Ben, 10. Look at that. Unbelievable, huh?
Wow, Ben, well done.
Don't overdo it, huh?
Yeah, thanks, Amanda. Well, Gareth, I won't.
Are you going through like a 2007 Britney Spears phase where you're now like drinking a lot and...
Look, I can't really get out of hand. That's just...
Okay.
It's like built into me.
You aren't about to like go bald and start smashing paparazzi...
Yeah, I really hope I'm not going bald. I'm doing whatever I can to prevent that.
Got to ask these things. Got to make sure.
Yeah, I always ask my my hairdresser. I always say to, am I getting any closer to baldness? And luckily, he said, no, it's unlikely I'll go bald.
Ooh.
Which I'm very happy about.
Huh?
I mean, look, everybody eventually loses hair if you're a man. And some unfortunate women. But I always make him check. Like receding hairlines, any of that shit. I'm like, just warn me. So I need mental time to adjust if it does start happening. And he said, nah, if you reach this stage of your life and you're not bald yet, you're probably not going to be.
Oh.
No.
But I guess, like, for example, with men particularly, your father's a good example.
Actually, no. I believe it's...
In Gareth's case, the worst example.
Yeah, because my dad is bald. He's got a little bit of hair.
What? Why do you say actually no?
No.
Is it something biologically?
Apparently, it's the mother's father. That's what I've heard. It could be one of those old wives' tales. But it's the mother's father who determines how much hair you'll have. So in that case, yay. Look, I don't care where it comes from. I'm just really happy. I don't
as long as it stays.
See, I'm not one of those people who could pull off bald well. I remember when Noni Gasa did it for the first time, and it was something that not a lot of women were trying at that stage. And she just looks so spectacularly good, no matter what. And I remember looking at her thinking, wow, she's got such a beautiful shape head.
Yeah.
Yeah, I think that's what makes a difference, is the shape of your head.
Yeah, because if you've got a weird-looking head, like a cone head or an alien-shaped head...
Yes.
Then it just sticks out.
Oh, it's going to look horrible.
But a lot of it probably also has to do with your sass. You know, you've got to be able to convince people that you look good.
Major confidence required.
Yeah.
See, but that's the problem with all these looks, right? Really good-looking people try it, and they're like, "Yeah, I could look."
And
like
they give
David
us
Beckham.
Hope, don't they?
Yeah. All these celebrities with their much money and things, and then we try it on like a working-class Tuesday, and we just look like ass.
I have to say, I'm so jealous of people like that because you know, for example, Nonikasa, whether she's bald, whether she has long hair, shorter, whatever the case is.
She never looks bad.
You know?
No. There's nothing that woman can do to look ugly.
Damn it.
But speaking of hair, Sia has gone back to black.
Like an Amy Winehouse album.
You lasted 2 weeks with the bright orange hair.
Yes.
And you did well this, yeah?
You did very well.
Let's see. It was like a little toe in the water situation.
Yeah, but I do think that this is your color. This is definitely more you.
Well, the only problem is when you actually dye your hair back to black, this is what I discovered actually, is that this isn't a natural black though. This is very like dark jet black.
Yeah, looks good.
As opposed to my natural black. You know,
which is a little duller.
Yeah, it's a slight difference, but right now I call it the Jermaine Jackson phase.
Well,
where I look way too fake right now.
I mean, you guys interviewed Stoffel that day when he's the hairdresser that we've got on in Stoffel's chair, which you can go and check out on cliffcentral.com. Very, very good. Interviews a number of really well-known people and some of his clients, and it's just fun to see the kind of conversations that go on at the hairdresser. But a lot of people say, you know, you are partly defined by your hair. And for a lot of people, whatever your hair is part of you. It's part of your identity.
Yeah.
And that's why, especially for women, it's a big deal. Like going for a haircut is therapy in some ways. You walk out of there feeling brand new.
Mm.
And you know that feeling when you need to do something with your hair. It's been a couple of weeks. You're starting to feel a little bit. Yeah, that's why I'm amazed at how human beings, we really only, I think, when did we invent scissors? It was somewhere around the 1500s. I mean, before that, you used to use a blade.
Oof.
Or a sharp knife edge.
Yeah, hair removal was never a great thing.
No.
You used to get a very sharp rock at one stage.
Yeah, right. Now, you imagine, that can't be fun. That's not going to the hairdresser, that's going to war. We just, again, we take everything that humanity's been through and we look at it in the context of our lives, and it's just so hard for us to get perspective because our lives are so great compared to every generation before us. It's wonderful being us in every way. There's nothing I'm jealous of.
I'm not complaining either, yeah.
You know, I've been listening to these World War I podcasts.
Oh, wow, there were podcasts back then?
No, it's podcasts about World War I. Wow. Wow, wow, wow.
From the trenches.
Thanks,
welcome
Ben.
To this week's edition.
Ben, what a horrible, horrible time for humanity.
Mm.
And, you know, we think, oh, Africa wasn't involved. Let me tell you, black Algerians were the first people to be gassed with chlorine gas in World War I. In the trenches. They were part of the French Foreign Legion or the French Reserve Force. These guys were taken out in their droves.
They were the pawns.
North Africa, Verdun, the Somme, Ypres. These were some of the most ugly, apocalyptic scenes you can imagine in human history. Craters where millions and millions and millions of shells had fallen on a piece of earth no bigger than the average property in Bryanston. It's just, it boggles the mind. Whole forests turned to matchsticks. Gas, mustard gas rolling over this terrain. These poisoned craters filled with dead bodies. The grease that came from the dead bodies, the smell of death, the poison, the arsenic in there, the cold, the snow, they'd fill with water. The constant smell of gunpowder and burning in the air, and it looked like the moon, only worse. And then just dead people everywhere. I mean, in one week, I think it was 1 week, 200,000 people were mowed down on both sides. In 1 week. Yeah, it's just, you know, I get into my car and I'm like, I live in a different universe. This is only 100 years ago. In fact, over the weekend, they had some commemorations near Ypres. For 100 years, a centenary since the First World War, you know, 1917 it would have been. And there are still parts of the battlefield at Verdun where nothing grows. Nothing grows. It's parched. The soil is dead. There's a place there called the Douaumont Ossuary, which is an enormous building that's just full of bones.
Mm.
Just filled to the brim with bones of people who were killed in this war. And of course, all the world was involved because all the world belonged to Europe at that point. Whether you were a German colony, French colony, an English dominion, Canada, India, Australia, New Zealand, parts of Southeast Asia, South Africa, places like Nigeria, Algeria, Tanzania, which was then called Tanganyika, was a German province. It's absolutely incredible how many people were involved in that theater of war, whether it was in the Mediterranean, you know, you had Gallipoli and all that stuff, whether it's in the French Western Front, whether it's the Russians on the Eastern Front, the Ottomans, the Turks. This was just the biggest massacre. Massacre. People just walked into bullet, just bullets, just curtains of bullets.
Whew.
I mean, now we complain if our sandwich is cold. And we go online and we bitch about how, oh, well, if I've had a trance operation, you can't stop me from being in the military. I mean, that, everyone should be forced at gunpoint to realize what a cruel, vicious history we have. And then they'll come away from that feeling like they were done a favor being put at gunpoint. Because it's just like life in every way is better than anything it's ever been before. Everywhere. God, it's an unbelievable thing. I can't tear myself loose from this. I'm looking up images. I'm reading the biographies of all the people involved. Because I didn't really know that much about this period in human history. And I am blown away by the kinds of things that people did to each other. Civilized people, supposedly. Sure.
Well, the true silver lining, if there was even one in this point, is that actually we are progressing then as humans. Mm, well, we may not be the best or be in the best position right now,
no,
but at least we aren't still stuck in that place.
No, we're in a much better position and we are getting better. And,
yeah.
And you know, this is where I think, you know, we read about the news today and we think, well, that's bad news and this is terrible and that happened. And really, we don't live in threat. We don't live under constant duress. If you're feeling sorry for yourself this morning, just stop it. Please pick up a history book. If you think today is a horrible day, for whatever reason, you think you got a horrible life or a horrible job, just stop it. You're embarrassing yourself. Go pick up a history book. No matter how awful your life is right now, you're going to get no sympathy out of me. Go and read a history book. Go and look up what happened at the Somme. Ugh. Gives me the creeps. And think about how there is no way that life could be worse than it was for those people in those trenches. Mud and shit and blood and iron and stench and death. And ash. Misery. Abject misery.
How you stay resilient in a place like that,
I don't know. I mean, people...
I really wonder.
They obviously lost their minds, but in those days, they didn't care about psychology either. So if you went crazy, they'd just shoot you. There was nothing good about it. There was nothing. It was just... If someone had shell shock, post-traumatic stress disorder, they would just shoot them. They'd go, oh, it looks like Tommy's lost his mind. Have to shoot him. Boom. You had to go across the barbed wire and over the trench and face the bullets and go into this death zone, because otherwise your commanding officer would shoot you for cowardice.
Like, need I remind you, I couldn't even wrap my head around why Drucker still knocks Duplessis.
Yeah.
How he mentally prepares himself to go into a freaking cage and fight. Now, like, how you even begin to gather your thoughts into, cool, I'm about to get out there of this trench.
There's probably not a single soldier who fought in World War One who wouldn't rather be Drucker.
Oh, yeah. Drucker's is the dream.
Yeah. It's crazy. Anyway,
he speaking was, of which, yeah, sorry, go.
Mm-hmm. He was one of our guests on Friday. You can go and listen to the podcast.
Something about like that podcast with Vickers, firstly, was amazing. But secondly, contact sports and fighting, that kind of stuff, it does trigger something within you that you can see why people become obsessed with it or they become a massive part of their life.
Mm. Like animalistic.
That movie Fight Club? There's a real sort of human truth in that movie that average people are so tired of their average lives. They just want to go out there. The only thing that makes them really feel alive is a fist in the face or...
A bit of danger.
But that doesn't explain why there's still such a big audience with it. Or is it the same thing?
Because these are the same people that watch it fanatically or just too much of a pussy to go and actually fight. But they still want that same kind of danger.
Caught it to there. Just
that. Sort of, yeah. I'm not calling all fans softies, of course. It's just... But that's within us humans, we have that. We yearn for the that
yeah,
danger.
Nope. Mm-mm. I don't have that. No ma'am, no ham, no turkey, no salami. Oh, I have the feeling to be in Santon, honey. I have the feeling to be lunching with champagne. Yeah. Not in a fight club.
And I don't blame you. I mean, who wants to put themselves through hell? But mm-mm. I do see what Ben says. It's like people just have a desperate need to actually matter, to have something valuable happening in their lives. Because, I mean, just, you know, going to work and kind of going home in the evenings and having an average meal and getting in your car and worrying about the petrol price.
Yeah, maybe you need to read a history book to realize that you should appreciate
it. The thing is, like, it's in our DNA, the survival thing. And, like, that's why game consoles, like PlayStation and Xbox, is such a big deal. Guys want to go and play all that war stuff, and they want to fight like Mortal Kombat.
Oh.
By the way, someone wants to know what the podcast is. It's a guy called Dan Carlin, who I love. It's called Hardcore History. But this is why I love history so much. And everybody always says to me, oh, why are you so interested in the past? It's done. It's kind of, you know, you're not going to get anything out of it. And I love it because it tells you about people, and it tells you where we're at the moment. And you can get some idea of, like, the advances. Mm-hmm. And the hard-won territory that civilization has now. And why these things matter. Why, for example, it bothers me that there are people who will, you know, detonate themselves in a market in a suicide vest or drive a truck into a bunch of passers-by. Because we've worked so hard to get to a point where we can behave ourselves. And some people just don't want to do it. They don't want to accept that we're in a good place. And if we just all follow, if we stop when the light's red and we go when the light's green, there's method to us all getting along. And there's a purpose. Like, then you can build some civilization on top of that. But if we're all going to throw out the rules, and we're just going to do whatever we want the whole time, and we're not going to care about each other at all, you can't build a civilization. You can't sophisticate creatures like us without that base. Without that foundational level. We're just not capable of it. We will revert to animal. We will be beasts. And we'll do terrible things to each other. Mm. And it's so easy to slip back into that. I mean, this happened 100 years ago. Not 1,000, 10,000, or 100,000 years ago. 100 years ago. There are, I don't know how many are left. There probably can't be too many left now. They would be 118 years old. If they went to the front at 18. So I think most of them are dead. I think, in fact, the last World War I veteran, I remember reading something last year, died last year. So they're finished. There are no people who lived through it who are alive to tell those stories now. There were 10, 20 years ago. They were old. But this is somewhere within reach. Like, it's in memory. We've got pictures. We've got video. We've got biographies of the people who lived. It's history. It's real. It's there. You can read about it.
Mm.
And thanks to the internet, there's plenty of information. And you can see this stuff with your own eyes. You don't need to travel there and actually go and see this huge cemetery or the pockmarked landscape or any of that stuff. You can actually just Google it. But, man, have we made a major advance since then? And remember, we were fairly sophisticated before then as well. And it's amazing how, you know, you get to these points in human history where, like, the whole of the achievement could be lost. It happened when the fall of the Roman Empire took place, and they went into what they called the Dark Ages, where it was just violent and cold and harsh and dead, and then you would have these Germanic tribes roaming through what used to be Gaul, French, Roman France.
Mm-hmm.
And they'd see an aqueduct and they'd go, this must have been built by a giant. Because they'd lost memory of, like, that carried water. It was a sophisticated means of carrying water around. The Romans, it had been lost to them. They were like, they were scrounging in the dirt again. Look at that thing there. It must have been built by giants. So it can be lost. Like, if shit really got real now, and there's no reason why it should.
When shit got realer.
But if it got real, like, we always think, oh, we live on a knife's edge. We don't really. Donald Trump is so bad for the world. It's all to give. Really, he's not that bad. If we did go to shit, though, we could end up in a post-World War III world where nothing would work. They would use electromagnetic pulses to just destroy anything electronic. Anything. There would be no network. We would have to start again.
Yeah, we wouldn't, because we'd become suicidal without our phones. We'd just go, nope, you know what? Far too much effort.
Oh, man. All right. Rusty says he's been bald since he was 17. It's difficult to have confidence in high school when you look 30 at that age. I reckon that is hard.
Mm.
Yeah.
Being bald at 17.
But if it's like, if it's a choice between one of two things, either going bald or fighting to keep your hair, I would suggest then that just go bald, because there's nothing quite as pathetic as a man trying to hold on to his hair that's decided to leave him.
Yep, and brushing it all forward.
It's just pitiful.
Shame. You kind of get attached to it. You can understand.
I get it, but it really exposes you to look like an idiot.
Mm. I feel really sorry for women who go bald.
No, women are in a far better position, because these days you've got wigs, you've got all sorts of things that are deceptive.
Okay, good point.
Yeah, see, as soon as a woman wears a wig, it's fashion. A man wears a wig and it's like,
sad.
All right, let's get into some news. It is just about 6:30. First thing on a Monday, everybody needs to do is catch up with what's gone on in the news. And I haven't checked any newspapers. I didn't watch any news on TV. I didn't get on the internet news sites. I didn't even check Twitter this weekend. Did I miss anything? Well, we'll find out with Mabale Moloi. And it's brought to you by Colcacchio Pizzeria. We love them. We talk about them every day, not just because they are longtime friends and allies of ours here at cliffcentral.com, but because they really are one of our favorite places to go and eat. You can get the coolest, best, most incredible recipes. And a lot of their pizzas are pizzas that you won't find anywhere else. They do all the gluten-free stuff for the people who don't like that. For the people who are vegan, there's that option. There's lots of different stuff that you can do with them. Even cauliflower-based pizzas, believe it or not. And if that isn't enough, get their app. You can download it, and you can get rewards if you play the game right, and you're smart about it, and you can grow your own free slices in the process. And before you know it, you'll be buying everybody free pizzas.
Yeah, it's a really great feature on the app where you go into a screen, and it tells you how many slices you have, what you're now eligible for.
Mm.
So it's like, this many slices can get you this, and it's a menu item.
Nice. Right, let's get into it. Mubs, you ready for us?
Mm-hmm.
All right. Just checking. We've got to make sure that everything's in place. Here it is. It is the news. Thank you.
All right. So when somebody puts their foot in it and ends up making your organization look bad, you have to call them to order, which is exactly what's happened to the president's son, Edward Zuma.
Uh-oh.
The ANC says that they are disgusted, disappointed, and embarrassed by Edward Zuma's comments about two senior members of the ruling party.
Oh.
The president's son was in an open letter writing mood, as tends to happen to a lot of people in this country.
Yep.
So he took pen to paper, and one of the things that he did was refer in this open letter to former finance minister Pravin Gordhan as a, quote, stooge of white monopoly capital, end quote.
Who is?
Pravin Gordhan.
Oh, okay.
He also described the former tourism minister, Derek Hanekom, as an Afrikaner askari. Again, his own words. So his race-baiting statements have been described by the Human Rights Commission as disturbing and offensive. And then the ANC national spokesperson, Zizi Kodwa, says, well, members should not be attacking one another through the media. He said, Edward Zuma cannot assume him to be a super member of the ANC. He must respect the protocols of the organizations. And he's not the spokesperson for the province or a branch. His branch in KwaZulu-Natal must deal with that and condemn it. But the president's son is not having any of it, even though the Human Rights Commission, you know, said that his comments were disturbing and offensive and the ANC spoke out against him. He still stands by his word. In a response, Zuma said he is standing by the words of the open letter he wrote to Hanekom and Gordon. And, you know, he also, just to add the cherry on top, referred to them as sellouts.
Yeah, you know, I don't know why anyone's paying attention to Edward Zuma. The only reason he exists is because of his dad. And I don't mean that in a literal sense, clearly. I mean, his dad made him. But I'm saying if his dad weren't the president, who ever thought or spared any moment of their day for Edward Zuma before Jacob Zuma became president and we had to discover this brood of endless children who we're all seemingly employing into the state and sheltered jobs? Who cared? And why should we care about him now? And really, Zizi Kodwa, and do we even need to hear from him at this point? Not in the media.
It's such a good question because people obviously want to sell stories, so they'll quote anybody who can get like a click. Yeah, and that's what it comes down to.
And enough already. I'm really not that interested in what Edward Zuma says. Let's do a quick snap poll around the room. If Edward Zuma stopped writing open letters tomorrow, would that spoil your enjoyment of the week? Anyone? No.
Don't jump up at once, folks.
Nah.
No. All right. By the way, this is a guy who said some really, really stupid things. When people talk so much smack and they have so little that is intelligent to contribute to the conversation, we should stop listening to them. You should block them. Not on Twitter, not in social media, but in real life. Block them. Like, put a big no entry sign on their forehead. Figuratively now. And just stop worrying about them. Count them out. It's people like Jimmy Manye, Boom Bindwane, Andy Langletama. Just, they don't matter anymore. No one cares what they have to say. Credibility, toilet level. Moving on.
Well, two senior members at the University of Johannesburg have been busy, friends. They've been so busy that they have made off with at least 25 million rand of the university's money that they've been channeling into their private business.
Wow. How did they get that right?
I have no idea. But the Sunday Independent has reported that the chairperson of council, Professor Roy Marcus, and the deputy vice-chancellor for finance, Jaco van Schoor, made off with at least 25 million rand of UJ's money they channeled into their private business.
How do they get that right?
Skill and strategy.
Well, now they're going to go to jail, right?
Well, I mean, they've been caught, they've been named, so we expect that they should answer to their thievering. The Sunday Independent also says that the pair were ousted by a whistleblower who alerted the university of this alleged fraud, which is believed to have happened over a period of 3 years.
Wow. You've got to admire, like, the ballsiness of it. Mm. That's a lot of money to steal over a period of time, you know?
25 million.
UJ has since suspended the two with pay.
What? Suspension must always be without pay.
Oh, please. Okay, fine, UJ. You do whatever you feel is best. Yes.
When did this start becoming a thing? Because they do it in government all the time. They're like, someone is a really bad person. They fire them. Mm. But then they carry on paying them. They're like, suspend you with full pay. That's never happened to me. I would love to, look, I don't want to be suspended, but but I would love to have, like, got one of those cushy jobs. How long do we pay for Ria Piecha for? I think we still are.
Yeah, crazy. So it must be because of some other fine print in a contract, I imagine.
Look,
yeah.
And you want to be in one of those positions and the case is like still unresolved a good 4 years later.
Right.
And you're still just sitting around and getting paid for that. That's what we need to crack.
Yes.
That's what we want.
How come we can't do that? Why are we so dumb that we don't know how to do this?
So the suspension is pending the outcome of an investigation which is being conducted by auditing firm Sizwe Ntsabula Gobodo. Mm-hmm. The university's Herman Oosterhuizen said, in the interest of governance and for the investigation, Professor Ray Marcus and the Deputy Vice Chancellor for Finance, Jaco van Schoor, have stepped down. But yes, they will keep paying them.
God, that's mad.
Yep, it
Don't
is.
Don't pay the Oaks. Get rid of them.
Yeah, and then in tragic news over the weekend, the annual Carling Black Label Cup at FNB Stadium resulted in the death of two people after a stampede. 20 minutes before the scheduled kickoff of the cup at FNB Stadium, a small group of members of the public who didn't have tickets, despite the presence of members of the SAPS and a private security, they decided to force their way through the stadium gates, and what ensued was a rolling wave breaching the perimeter gates, and it just resulted in a horrific stampede, and as a result, two people lost their lives at that game on Saturday afternoon.
Well, let me ask you this. I mean, nobody's talking about it, but there were apparently 3,000 tickets that were sold on the black market that were not meant to have been sold.
Oh, wow.
So we've got to figure out, and we've seriously got to do some work here to figure out who these syndicates are, because there's no way you can sell 3,000 tickets if you're just some scalper outside the stadium. And these are the people who are responsible for those two deaths. So how does this happen? Like, someone's got to be responsible, right?
Yeah, exactly. I mean, from what I gather, all the traditional security methods were taken. Yeah. You got three, as you say, you got 3,000 people who believe they've paid their way in.
Mm-hmm. Oh, man.
Right. It's not on. Because those people, there aren't, there's not adequate space for those people. That's where stampedes happen.
Mm.
So someone's got to take this in hand. And I reckon it has to be the PSL. And they've got to find out who's doing this and they've got to stop it. Because I wouldn't be surprised if it were people who run the PSL who sold these extra tickets because they're after the money.
Well, our track record's not great there, Gareth.
Exactly. So come on, let's stop bullshitting each other and start worrying about people's lives. These are just football fans who wanted to have a nice day out.
Well, a lot of people are questioning why did the game carry on. So the
stampede happened while there was play.
Well, as Mub said, it's basically just prior to kickoff there was this wave of stampeding, and then some Twitter accounts didn't know about it, and they were tweeting from corporate accounts going on, "What a great game this is."
Mm.
It was not a pretty sight.
And by the way, these companies that pay people to do this, to just carry on tweeting, and then a major event like this happens, it's so embarrassing. Like, that's when you see that there's obviously, you know, someone signed off on a social media strategy, or they've got an agency doing it for them, and then it doesn't make sense when something like this happens, and they're totally in the game, and they're not paying attention to what's happening.
Yeah, I mean, I don't know when exactly news broke of the two deaths, but I imagine, you know, people...
It was before end of full time, I think.
Oh, is it?
I think it was.
Sure. All right. That's all we got time for right now. We'll catch up with some more news after 7, but let's cross to Ben and see what's going on with the sport. Lots of catching up to do here.
It was Super Rugby semi-final weekend, mm-hmm. and predictably the Crusaders were too good for the Chiefs. The Crusaders decided not willing to play with the ball, decided to play with the Chiefs instead. And the 27-13 scoreline was pretty fair, pretty cutting for what many people believe is the best team in the tournament. So when I say they decided not to play with the ball, New Zealand and the Crusaders and just smart Kiwi players had basically been playing like the Springboks did back in 2007. And these guys, they were so smart. They made us think that our brand of rugby was so inferior. Then they basically took it and then mastered it. And the Crusaders won with like 30% of the ball or something stupid like that.
Wow.
Then again, when the conditions are as dodgy as they always are in Christchurch, the place that ironically Jesus hates because of all the natural disasters, you have to play percentage rugby. And the Crusaders have been doing that, and they're just too strong. Other semi-final, a very, very different display of rugby, mostly because the conditions were dry and it was a very fast and frenetic game. The Hurricanes, well, they were 22-10 up at halftime. The Lions actually scored just before the halftime hooter, so it was 22-3 and it was looking very much dead and buried. Pretty much every single drunk person in Ellis Park wanted to kill Yaku Paper. That was the ref, who was, many believe, was not picking up on the Hurricanes' rush defense, which looked very much offside a lot of the time. Then the second half came round, and, well, Johan Ackerman at halftime said, "Listen, Oaks, let's just reset the scoreboard. We're getting absolutely pumped, but let's not get ahead of ourselves here. We can still win this. 22-10 down against a rampant Hurricanes team? That takes some balls to think you can still do this." Well, Burden Barrett, he was given a yellow card at a crucial time deep in the second half. At that stage, the Hurricanes were leading 29-22. Now, Paper, who had felt the wrath of the crowd for the first half, was now the hero because he yellow carded Barrett. Barrett was on the wrong side of the tackle. He moved away. He scooped the ball with his legs. And I don't care what you say, New Zealanders, he did that with intent. Everything these New Zealanders do, they do it for a reason. There's no accident with these guys. They're far too clinical. And when it comes to, ever since the days of Sean Fitzpatrick, they know how to kill opposition ball. That's what Paper saw. I agree with him. Burden Barrett got the yellow card. Final result, 44-29. So 22-point that the Lions heaped on after that. I think ultimately the Lions were always going to come back, but I just never saw this kind of a turnaround. No one really did. Absolutely incredible. You can blame altitude. You can talk about the ref. You can talk about a variety of things. But ultimately this Lions team just showed good old-fashioned fight and desire and a little bit of belief. So good on you, Johan Ackerman, for being a steady head. And good on you, the Lions, for showing that even without Warren Whiteley, you do have the composure for the big time. So, you ask, well, who's the favourite for the final? Well, the Crusaders have just played two terrible matches in horrible conditions, and they're basically just outlasted the other guys. Easy. But now you're coming to a position where it's going to be running rugby from start to finish. You need the ball in hand. And, well, let's just say, let's make a call around Wednesday or Thursday. I'm not comfortable making a call now. But the Lions, well done. This is their second final in a row, and this time at a home. So the big home advantage is going to be absolutely key. On to the cricket. That's also taking place right now. The Proteas, well, they're playing against England. If you did not watch any of this over the weekend, I'll give you a quick catch-up. England won the toss.
Mm-hmm.
There was much in it for the bowlers. The Proteas started off really, really well, but unfortunately, Vern Philander got the shits, but, like, so bad.
Yeah, this is awful.
He bowled, I think, all of four overs. He was looking deadly as ever, accurate as ever. I think at that stage, he'd conceded all of, like, two runs, and he'd already taken walking wicket Jennings out.
Right.
But then he had to go off, which was very sad. And then Alistair Cook really got stuck into it. So he composed himself. He got through the tough times. Wesley made his debut. He was okay. Scored 25. Root was gone for 29. Malan was cleaned up by Rabada. And then Stokes, that plucky ginger, all of the second day, he then got 112. So all those scores mounted up to 353, which on that wicket everyone said was absolutely brilliant. But as the pitch gets more worn at the Oval, it becomes a bit better to bat on days 2, 3 and 4. Well, the Proteas wouldn't have given you that suggestion, would they? 175 all out with their second innings. It was just dire. Absolutely dreadful. Temba Bavuma, the only man with some fight in the top order, again. This poor guy. I mean, like when you're this talented and you get to the Proteas, right, you want to be able to bat, not survive. But because the top order is just crumbling around him, he's got to go, okay, guys, how about I just try to stay out here while the rest of you play Sudoku back in the change room. So he got 52, and Vern Philander, he spent the night in hospital. He pulled.
That's a lot of shitting if you have to actually go to hospital and be put on a drip.
Yeah, he pulled the drip out, put the pads on, and went out to bat, just so he can try and last where everyone else has kind of failed.
What a brave man.
Yeah, a hugely brave man. You got actually handed to the bowlers. Rabada made 30, Morne Morkel made 17, and then Philander, basically on a drip. I mean, Vern's he's quite a chunky chap, right? I mean, he looked positively emaciated. He looked like he was partying with High Rob over the weekend when he went out to bat. He was a mess. And 175 all out. So then you're thinking, okay, well, maybe there's more in this pitch for the bowlers. Well, bollocks to that, because again, the Proteas bowlers missed their length. England, 313 for 8 declared. Mammoth, 492 is the total. And what did the Proteas do after that, Gareth?
No idea.
Absolutely choked the crap out of it again.
Oh, God.
Fall of wickets, so decent start, 21 runs, then it was a wicket. Then Umla went to 47, Quinton de Kock was bowled at 52, and Faf du Plessis, well, he padded up to a straight one, first ball duck. So at 52 for 4, pretty much all done and dusted, but Dean Elgar, he's got some fight. He's currently 72 not out at the crease. So 117 before. Temba, the man for the moment, Bavuma, he's also there on 60 not out. So what they need to do today, because this has been an amazing summer this week. It has really been. There's been rain. Okay, third day was pretty much rained out towards the latter stages. But the weather looks set fair now. So what the Proteas need to do is basically bat for three sessions. The fact that they can't even bat for one session a lot of the time in this series is really, really worrying. And to think in the last test, they won by 340 runs. Many people are calling that an anomaly. I'm calling it, well, does it even have any relevance right now? So 6 wickets are all the Proteas have left. There's no way they'll get to 492. Advantage, England. In the Formula 1, it was a Ferrari 1-2 yesterday in Hungary. Not very good news for Mercedes, because now they're going to the sort of summer break. End of the August, we'll see the next Grand Prix, which will be in Belgium. And it's all Ferrari, because Vettel is now top of the points as well. In golf, Jordan Smith beat Alexander Levy in the European Open. He beat him in the playoff. And Jonathan Vegas beat Charlie Hoffman in the playoff for the Canadian Open. The Venezuelan has defended his title there and now has enough money to buy everyone in his home country one roll of toilet paper at least. Bernard Langer, he wins the Senior British Open and with that records his 10th Senior Major Championship, which, Anthea, is one more than Mr. Gary Player. Although Mr. Gary Player has never had to anchor his putter, he has been much fitter and stronger than Bernard Langer, and he can still do more push-ups than him. So you've got to ask the question, who is the better champion?
Got to be Gary.
Well, obviously Gareth. Yeah. And then finally, this is a big week, because this is the week of the IAAF World Champs. This is athletics at its absolute finest. We've just seen the best swimming talent in action, now for the best athletic talent. And of course, it is Usain Bolt's farewell to the sport. So, Saturday night, this is the big one. Saturday night at 10:45 South African time, Usain Bolt will be up in the final for the last time. Just diarize this. Drop everything you have going for this weekend coming up. Saturday, the 5th of August, 10:45 South African time, the final of the men's 100 meters, where Akani Sambini will also be in action. I'll bring you more about that closer to the time. But now, we must get to the finance with Anthea Gordon.
Well, very good. Thank you, Ben. How excellent. All right. Look, that's your intro. Well, it's nice to have you back. How was London?
London was busy, very busy. I mean, geez, I forget how absolutely manic and just go, 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 do, do, do they are. Mm. So it was nice, actually.
Yeah, you were saying, in fact, on Skype on the first day we spoke to you there, you said there's an urgency, like people need to... That's something we need to redevelop here. There's no urgency. People are not in any hurry to get things done, and we will remain a rural backwater to the world's economy if we don't start getting some urgency going, right?
That is so productive. Of course, the irony is that I picked up two funds while I was there. I went for one and picked up two. Both of them are investments into Africa, which is great. Not that much South Africa, though. People are beginning to see that they're losing interest in us, eh? They're worried about the political situation. Well, things are not happening.
I got to quote Judith February, who I saw tweeting just now. We've got an incapable finance minister. We've got a SARS commission who doesn't know what they're doing, and a president who's clearly got major challenges in terms of these corruption charges, which just will not go away. Why would anyone want to invest in that?
Absolutely.
Why would anyone trust those people to lead their money to greener pastures? It's not going to happen. Let's get into the money shots.
Ba-ba-da, ba-da, ba-ba, ba-ba-da. She works hard for my money, Anthea. She works hard for your money, Anthea. She works hard for her money, so we better treat her right.
All right. So, shall we start with a market update from Friday?
Yep. We started the morning kind of very much lower, but then ended the day flat after a nice little rally. The top 40 has had a very strong week. It gained 1.3%. So we've had some nice bounces. You know, the resource sector did particularly well. The Rand was relatively stable. It's now trading at 13, still trading, I should say, at 13, which is quite something. In the resources sector, gold was the only real theme. The dollar weakened, and so investors fled to bullion. It's now trading about $1,268 an ounce. Anglo Gold was up over 3%. Goldfields was 3.5%. So those were kind of the top performing shares in the resource sector. Platinum's not so much. A little bit of a miscalculation. I don't know what, if that's the right word. But like Lonmin was up 2%, but then Kumba was down over 3%. But you know, Kumba had that big rally last week. Mm. I think it was Monday or Tuesday when they announced that they're reinstating their dividend. So that was quite nice. But then the iron ore prices come off. And so I think that's why Kumba was down on Friday. And then in the financial sector, mostly the shares were okay, but Barclays Group Africa, or Barclays Africa Group, I should say, reported results which were a bit disappointing, actually. So the share was down 2.2%. Normalized diluted headline earnings per share were slightly ahead of expectations at 7%. But it wasn't so much the earnings, but rather that impairments were down sharply, like much lower than expected. So just operationally, really just not a great set of results. Rand revenue actually declined by 1% year on year, which is not great.
No.
And they're now showing negative jaws. And I must tell you about jaws very quickly. It's spelt like the shark movie Jaws.
Right.
It's a ratio we use in the finance sector to measure the difference between income growth and cost growth or expense growth. And it's actually not even a ratio. It's just a very simple mathematical income growth rate less your expenses growth rate. And one of the things about the banks is if they can have positive jaws, in other words, their income can grow faster than cost. In fact, not just banks. Every single company, in fact, you know, the last thing you want is to be paying out more than you're making or for your expenses to be growing faster than your income. So for banks particularly, we look at this ratio because it's very telling, and Barclays disappointed, I'm afraid. I mean, they did try their best to contain costs, which was quite good. Costs was only up 3%, but if your revenue is down 3%, it's costs up of 3% is not a good thing, basically.
Right.
Yeah, I think their main focus going forward, now that they've split up with PLC, will probably be just to kind of maintain their retail and business bank performance, which was kind of the big underperformer in these results. Mm-hmm. And then in the industrial sector, everyone was having a bit of a joke about this. The tobacco companies went up in smoke on Friday. So British American Tobacco fell 7%. Yeah, the locally listed one. In London, the London listing fell 8%.
Wow. Why?
Because the FDA, the Food and Drug Administration, are proposing to cut nicotine levels in cigarettes to what they say to what they're calling non-addictive levels.
Huh.
I mean, so there's a whole, God, there was a whole big statement about it. They were saying the overwhelming amount of death and disease attributable to tobacco is caused by addiction to cigarettes. So the only legal consumer product that, when used as intended, will kill half of all long-term users. So this is now the FDA, the Food and Drug Association, kind of administration, sorry, coming out and just wanting to do the right thing. And Altria Group was down 6.5%. They're the guys who sell Marlboro in the US.
Right.
Reynet, who obviously own a big chunk of British American Tobacco, they're the investment holding company. They're listed in Luxembourg, I think. They were down 6.6%. You know, just tobacco companies taking an absolute pounding on Friday after the statement. I mean, I think it's a way away. FDA will engage with the public to see what is and what isn't acceptable.
Yeah, I mean, they're just proposing it. They're
exactly.
They're not going to make it happen yet. But people are so skittish.
Absolutely.
Huh. Right.
Yeah. There's no time like now, though. You know, that's how traders react.
Yeah, kind of, sure.
They don't waste time. And then Naspers ended the day about 0.5% lower, but it's now a 2,850 Rand share, which is not bad. This was on the back of quite a big tech sell-off on Friday post Amazon's disappointing results. So Amazon reported 40 cents per share earnings when we were expecting $1.41. So it's what, a 70% miss. And so that's a big one, you know. And then, of course, all tech companies around the world fell. So including Tencent and our very own Naspers.
Okay, so for a while, Jeff Bezos was the richest guy, and then that disappeared when those results came out.
That's right. On Thursday, he was the richest man in the world with a fortune of $92.3 billion, which then turned around at kind of midday on Thursday. Yeah. So I'm afraid these results had a $12 billion pullback in the share price. It's quite incredible, right?
Kind of hits.
Yeah.
Sure. So,
and that's only like, I think it was a 2.4% move on the share price or something.
Okay.
So it just shows what a huge company it is. He's still lagging Bill Gates by $3.5 billion now. Yeah. So these, and of course, the third richest man is Spain's Amancio Ortega. So he's the Zara guy, right?
Right.
And his net worth is about $82.7 billion.
Good for him.
That. Yeah.
Wow. There's a lot of money in the world. You just got to be clever enough to find it.
Between
or
those
lucky enough.
Three, oh, it's just ridiculous, actually.
All right. Then can we talk about the... what else was it?
Before we move on, can I just say Tesla? I noticed that Tesla hardly moved on Friday. Hey?
Why?
Because, you know, they released their Model 3S or whatever it was called.
Oh, yeah?
And so I think people were expecting it to be up quite a bit, but it didn't actually move at all. Like, just not even a fifth of a percent on Friday. And it has come off quite significantly. It's one of those really difficult shares because it's valued so richly that it's to buy into it is almost it'll take some guts, I'll tell you that. But at the same time, you almost can't ignore it, right? Because Elon Musk is doing such amazing things.
Would you say that Tesla is an automotive manufacturer or a technology company?
Yeah, that's a good question. Huh? I would say automotive, but yeah, I mean, good. What do you think? Good question.
Yeah, I think it's a tech company, which is also probably why it didn't go up so much because all the other tech companies were basking in that
point.
Amazon afterglow,
lack
thereof. Yeah. So I think maybe it's a tech company.
Yeah, you have a very good point actually. So we'll just
it's not run by a guy who makes cars.
Yeah, it's run by tech savvy going. Yeah, that could well be the reason, in fact. I'm going to go with that.
All right.
And then we saw U.S. GDP growth come in on Friday, 2.6% quarter on quarter, which is a huge step up. The previous quarter was revised down from 1.4% to 1.2%. And really, consumers were the people doing the heavy lifting in the second quarter because they increased spending quite a bit. And of course, you know, we've been watching the labor market so carefully, so we know that unemployment is at the lowest level at what, 4.4? Was it last read, I think, somewhere around there. So I think the U.S. consumer is suddenly just confident and, you know, back out there consuming and spending and working again, and that's quite nice. And so, of course, this big discrepancy between whether they're going to raise interest rates, because remember about 2 weeks ago the US Fed said they weren't going to be in a hurry, but now the economy's growing,
right,
labor market's stable, they're still waiting for inflation to kick in. But there's really just no reason for them almost not to raise interest rates. Which is surprising that the rand or the dollar remains so weak, actually.
What about oil?
Yeah, so oil's trading back above $50 a barrel. And actually for us, that's not great because the Department of Energy has already said that petrol will increase for us on the 2nd. When's that? Wednesday. So petrol's going to go up by 1.5% locally on Tuesday, so get ready for it, which is a shame considering that the Reserve Bank has just cut interest rates because inflation was well within their target band. And I think, you know, a higher petrol price will definitely have a negative, in our case, impact on the inflation rate and push it higher. So, and this oil price is a little bit odd because it's been so volatile, and I guess it's that OPEC are wanting to cut production or cut supply so that they can keep the oil price at a decent level that makes sense for everybody. But then at the same time, they've got shale coming online and they've got the other producers like Libya who don't belong to OPEC, who don't have to be constrained by these cuts, producing more oil as the others cut. So I don't know. At some stage, I guess they'll have to find some sort of balance.
All right. Anything else you want to throw in?
No, that's pretty much. I mean, I think we're starting to see some reporting coming through this week. Otherwise, no real big numbers.
Are we hoping for a good week?
Oh, we are. I am.
Well, obviously, we're
I always am.
Yeah, but I mean, in the light of last week, do you think we will have?
Yeah, I think the U.S. are still producing decent earnings. We've got the GDP growth number was quite good. Oil's back up, and so there's no reason for us not to have one.
Yay. Thank you, Anthea.
My pleasure.
Anthea Gardner, The Money Shot, Monday, Tuesday, Wednesday, Thursday, and Friday at about this time. There we go. That's all you need to know. When we come back, we'll get into some news. We'll meet our guest a little bit later on. Mubs, you're going to like this. Our guest is just to make us all feel like we've done nothing in our lives, 22-year-old millionaire.
Good for him.
Right.
Good for him.
This is CliffCentral.com.